Hello once again, Miner fans. Welcome and thanks for listening to another Picks Up podcast exploring the sports, stories, issues, and personalities associated with UTEP athletics. I'm John Teicher. Hopefully you, your family, and friends are continuing healthy and productive. Thanks to all of our healthcare professionals, first responders, and to all on the front line whose efforts are so significant and much appreciated. One of the more popular UTEP football miners, certainly of recent vintage, changed his address not long ago. This young man grew up right here in El Paso, prepped at Montwood High School, starred as a UTEP linebacker from 2001 to 2004, is still fifth in program history in tackles, played professionally, then turned his attention to coaching, seven seasons as a miner's assistant before the last five at the sport's highest level in the National Football League with the Minnesota Vikings. He's back now in the collegiate ranks, preparing for his first campaign as the defensive line coach at Arizona State University, number 43 from his days in the orange and blue. Robert Rodriguez joins us to reminisce and discuss his career path. Coach Rodriguez, it still seems a bit odd to utter those exact words. Thanks for doing this.
No, my pleasure, Ty. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, I know you're on the road right now, moving from Minneapolis to Arizona. Where are you?
I am outside of Omaha, Nebraska right now. We're currently on I-80. So we're driving somewhere outside of Omaha right now.
You and your dad, huh?
Yeah, me and my dad. He took the reins, man, so he's doing me a solid right now. He's got the reins, and I got my bulldog Aloysius in the back seat. Just enjoying the trip.
You and your wife, Holly, you were telling me, just bought a house in Chandler, correct?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we decided to buy. They said the market was good, and it's kind of crazy. We rented up in Minneapolis, and we're only spending about $100 more down in Chandler, and we've got a big old house compared to what we had in Minneapolis. So pretty good. We're excited.
Well, you got to love the cost of living in the old, great old Southwest, don't you?
Oh, I gotta love that. You gotta love that when come December, I don't have to shovel my way out to get to work. That's gonna be fun. And we got a pool too. The kids, that was the clincher. You know, the kids didn't, you know, they love the Vikings and they love the game. We told them we were getting a pool. They got over it pretty quick.
So once you move in, how long do you estimate it'll take to get from your new front door to campus in Tempe?
Oh, maybe 20 minutes. Yeah, I'm pretty close to all highways and stuff. So maybe between 20 and 30 minutes, so not too bad.
And, of course, the hours you'll be driving early in the morning to the office and after rush hour later in the day to get home, that should cut down on that commute, right?
There's no doubt about that. And I developed that habit even worse going to the National Football League because those coaches get there at ridiculous hours. I used to compete, try to beat Zimmer to the facility, never could. And then I did the same thing with Herm, and I can't beat him either.
What time? I'm just curious. When you were with the Vikings, what time generally during the week did you get to the office?
I'd say 5 o'clock. Typically between 4:30 and 5 in the morning. And then here, I tried one time to get. I tried to get there at 4 o'clock because I was just staying at an Airbnb. I had nothing better to do, and I still didn't beat Herm. He must have been there for half an hour. So I think he gets there somewhere 3:30, 3:45. At about 5 o'clock, I think, is typically where I would get to work.
Well, generally, what time did you leave when you were in Minnesota?
It depended on the day of the week. As the week went on, it got earlier, but the late days were around 10 or 11, and the early days were around 8 o'clock. So you get around Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you get out a little bit earlier. But early in the week, you know, between 9 and 10:30, typically on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Never worked a day in your life, did you?
No, man, not in those facilities. Now, there's some days now when I walked out of it, I felt like a whipped dog, but it was always worth it. And you know how it is when you're trying to win games, you'll do whatever you can do. So you're 100% right about that.
You actually accepted the ASU job in February. How's the return to college football been so far?
You know, I think it's been really great, especially because of the staff that I'm on. Herm Edwards is an unbelievable guy, and I'm working under Marvin Lewis and Antonio Pierce. Those are two guys I really respect, and I've learned a lot being around those guys. And obviously the recruiting landscape has changed quite a bit since I've been gone. I haven't been gone that long, but the recruiting landscape has changed considerably, so it's been fun to learn from all those recruiting guys how it's done as well. But I think the transition's been smooth. We run things like an NFL organization, and I really enjoy that. That's something I really do respect and appreciate.
You went through what there was of spring drills with the Sun Devils. How did that go, and how much were you able to get done?
We got 7 practices in, and it really, you know, we could complain about it, but we got more than most people did, and most people in our conference didn't get, you know, any practices in. So, you know, we got 7 in. You know, the first 2 are the acclimatization period, and so we didn't get a lot of thumping done those 2 days. There's 5 quality padded days. I know for defensive line, that's critical. But I thought there was a lot of good work done. I think we set a good foundation. We want more, but, you know, for me, I think there's plenty to coach off of going on right there.
And since then, I would imagine too many virtual meetings to count. Am I wrong?
You know, I would venture to say, you know, when I was in the office, you know, we had meetings with players. But I have never met so much in my stinking life as to where when this quarantine happened and this, I got more Zoom meetings than I know what to do with, man. So my poor wife, she kind of converted the basement into my little office. And I'd walk down to that basement. I would come back up about 5-6 o'clock. And she'd look at me, what have you been doing all day? And so I'll tell you what I've been doing. I've been Zoom meeting. I've been Zoom meeting with the entire world, what I've been doing.
So. Now, players, as you well know, and it may have happened to you as well, have been known to fall asleep in meetings when they're held in person. How do you keep that from happening virtually?
Well, they got to keep their videos on. I think it's easier because it's funny. Those guys don't nod off because they can see themselves. They're constantly checking themselves to make sure they look all right. So I think that helps them a little bit. But in a meeting, thing I've always done is I've given them the leeway to stand up, you know, stand up if you start nodding off. But you got to ask them questions and keep them involved. That helps too, whether it's Zoom meeting or in person. But the Zoom meeting, I haven't had that trouble yet because the guys are, you can see their faces, and so can they.
You mentioned Herm Edwards. He's entering third year as ASU's head coach. He spent an eternity in the NFL as a player, an assistant, and a head coach. I actually met Herm once a few years ago when he was working as a TV analyst. Everyone I know that knows him absolutely raves about him. Did you know Herm before you took the job?
I didn't know him. I had met him one time, and ironically, I met him when I was at UTEP. We played Arkansas.
Right. That's exactly.
And knew him through the NFL. And I bumped into him in the weight room in the morning. I went to go get a little bit of short lift in, and he was just finishing up. And I just kind of, you know, we just talked briefly. I don't think he'll ever remember that. You know, that didn't have anything to do with me getting hired. And but I did meet him briefly. And I tell you what, I've worked with a ton of people, the Vikings organization, and a bunch of the people in the front office and in the coaching world that have worked with or for him. And not one of them has anything bad to say about him. They love him to death. And it's funny, before I took the job, I knew he had a great reputation. After I got the job, I started getting calls from everywhere. And the stories that got to me of all the things that he's done for people that never been reported by the media, that people don't know, he just does them out of kindness of his heart. It's been unbelievable. So I was even more excited about working for him after I got the job. It's just kind of a affirmation that I had made the right decision. I was really, really grateful when I got those calls. Like, I'm working for a good man. And that's one thing I've realized in this business that makes all the difference in the world when you're working for a good person. You know, business is business, and that's always the hardest part of anything is business. But if you're going to work for somebody in this business, you got to work for good people. So Herm Edwards is definitely good. He's already done, you know, the whole reason why I'm moving right now is because Herm allowed me to go home, be with my family, take this all slowly, not be in a rush because of all the Zoom meetings. There's no reason for me to be there in person. So I've been able to help support my family and be around my wife this whole time because Herm Edwards is such a big person.
How did it develop that he offered you to join his staff?
You know, it's funny. I actually knew Tony White. You know, he was there as defensive coordinator. He had done an internship with the Vikings, and we had just really honestly just joked about me going down to ASU. And I always joked to him. I said, hey, you can't afford me. You can't afford me. And but when the job came open, you know, he got in touch with me, let me know it was open, asked me if I'd be interested. He actually asked, how much you making? You know, and obviously, you know, that was just a joke. You know, it wasn't a situation where they couldn't afford me. But, you know, he got my name in the mix. He took the job at Syracuse that very next week, so I thought I was out. What happened is Marvin Lewis took the job. Marvin is obviously was the head coach with Cincinnati when Zim was there. They're very close. So he said, I'm going to transition this into a defense that we ran in Cincinnati that's very much like Coach Zimmer. Same terminology, the whole thing. And so all of a sudden, I actually became even more valuable because obviously I'm coming from that system and run our defensive line. Now, our defensive line in Minnesota was extremely productive and very well respected. And so Marvin knew the value of what we were doing. And so that's how I got a chance to get in here and interview.
How ironic. Tony White, like you, was a high school star here in El Paso. You've known each other since you were kids, right?
Yeah, well, actually, he's a little bit older than me. And I actually went to his high school game, a couple of his games that he was playing at Burgess, just by chance. And then I've gotten to meet him. I actually got to meet him when we both got into coaching. He's a real personable guy, really good guy, great recruiter. And again, when he came with the Vikings, did a great job. And was a really good guy to know. And it's always good, you know, he didn't go to UTEP, he went to UCLA. But it's always good to see those guys from El Paso that are able to continue to work in his business and do good things and be good people. But that's what he is. I mean, he's got a great reputation in this business in college football. That's always great to see.
Talking about Marvin Lewis and Antonio Pierce, how's the chemistry been with those two? I would imagine you're like a sponge around working around those two.
No, absolutely. And the chemistry's been outstanding. And I didn't realize that Antonio actually played for Marvin. And Marvin was one of his first coaches with the Washington Redskins. And so he played for Marvin early in his career. And they have a great rapport between each other. Obviously, everybody in the building respects Marvin. And so, you know, it's really cool to see Antonio, he's going to be a superstar in this business. And Antonio is a great coach, but he's a great guy. I just can relate to everybody from the top down. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the president of the university or if you're the GA. Antonio has a great way of just being able to bond and relate to all those guys. And then Marvin is just a tremendous guy. I can see why it was so much fun to work under Marvin as a head coach, because he's so organized, has so much knowledge, and he's just such a good man. And he's really always allowing you to do your job and helping you to get better as a coach. You know, he periodically will send us articles or something that pops up on Twitter or something. He'll send it to us, and it has nothing to do with football. It has to do with something that's going to help you as a man. And working on Marvin, because it's been a lot. Absolutely. Just win from everybody that's staff, and I had a lot of fun in that.
Robert, how difficult a decision was it for you to leave the Vikings?
That's a great question, guys, because it was very difficult for me. The NFL is something, obviously, you've known me a long time, and you know where I'm from. So when I got to walk in those doors and actually, you know, I actually vested in my pension there. So I stayed long enough to be a vested veteran in the NFL, but walking into those doors and being able to say after that first game, saying, I did it, you know, I made it. I'm a part of this league that I've dreamt about since I was 4 years old. That meant so much to me coming from where I came from that, you know, I was willing to take less and do more and just to be a part of it. And so it was very difficult for me. At some point in time, it was time for me to step out and establish myself as a position coach or somebody who could run my own room. I come close to getting jobs in the NFL. It just didn't come to fruition, and that was one of the big things in my way. So it was time for me to, hey, jump out the nest, learn how to fly, and do what's best for my family. You know, I got two young boys and my wife who sacrificed so much for me. It was time for me to step out and do whatever it takes to branch out and start doing things on my own. And with the blessing of Coach Zimmer and Andre, you know, they felt hey, that was a good idea. You know, this was as good a situation as I could dream about, because I'm working in an NFL structure with NFL guys. And so I'm able to kind of, I'm able to get both sides of it. You know, I'm still establishing myself in the college game and establishing myself in the NFL because I'm working for NFL guys.
The last time we saw the Sun Devils was ironically right here in El Paso in a victorious effort over Florida State in the Tony the Tiger mm-hmm. Sun Bowl on New Year's Eve. How different a football team will ASU look like when they take the field to start this season?
Yeah, we'll be a little bit different. We got to make some, we lost some very important players. Obviously, we had a first-round draft pick that was playing receiver for us that I think is picked by the 49ers, 22nd pick or something like that. He's a big-time playmaker, but we have a young quarterback who played in that game, and he's a heck of a player. And you know, we're building this defensive line back up. You know, we lost a couple guys there as well, but I still got some guys returning that I really like. And what we're reshaping what we are doing at defensive line from top to bottom. It's a rebuild from top to bottom, and the guys that are in that room have given me just a tremendous effort, Tyson. Really good kids and doing the best they can, and they're going to be good players. And there's some guys, some good.
You know, as you mentioned, you're changing from an odd to an even.
Yeah.
Three to a
changing. Yeah, it's changing.
Is the personnel all in place to do that effectively right away, or is it going to take a bit of time to recruit to that new scheme?
Well, the standard's still going to be high, Tyson. I mean, we're going to expect to play at the standard that we want. So it's going to have to be. I believe in those guys in that room that we can get the job done. And you're always going to be recruiting to improve. But I believe in what I'm coaching and the technique that I'm teaching. I just got to get it drilled into their head and get them to play better than they've ever played. Now, if they played to the way they played last year and the years before, but if they buy into what we're doing and start to show, to finish the improvement they started in the spring, because if you look at that D-line, practice one, and then came back and looked at them practice seven, you're looking at two distinctively different D-lines. They made a significant improvement in seven practices, but it's still not good enough. But I do believe in my heart, if we can continue the work, we can play well enough to really help this team and do a lot of good stuff. But my expectations are high, my standards high. Now, I want us to be the lead dogs and really leaders on this team. That's a big jump that they got to make to do it. So I'm looking forward to seeing if we can get it done.
Here at UTEP, you tutor the linebackers, the secondary, the special teams. How do you like coaching defensive front?
I love it. I love it. I didn't think I'd love it this much. And the best part about it is that we coach it. And you guys remember Andre Patterson, and he's a great teacher. And we coach it different from anybody anywhere. And that's what's really cool about it is I think everybody thinks that D-line is just the same across the board, but we're unique. We're unique in what we do. So I think that's even more special is that, working with Andre, I feel like I have knowledge and a way of doing things that's really unique and special. And so I really loved it. And then the guys that I've gotten to coach at the defensive line with the Vikings have really opened my eyes to what defensive linemen are. And my teammates that were defensive linemen, because I was behind them, and my success was directly correlated to those guys doing their jobs. So I love those dudes out. Like a good running back loves his old line. I love my D line. But I think too many people think that D linemen are just meatheads and they just throw their heads against the wall. And we coach our guys to be intelligent, to be technicians, to be professional, to be hardworking and dependable teammates. And to watch those guys beat those standards and rise to that occasion, and the quality of men that we got to coach, that was really cool for me. And so I'm really excited to continue down that path.
Just like as a player, I would imagine that versatility, the ability to teach a number of different positions, would be a positive for one's coaching career. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. And I think it gives you perspective, too. It allows you sometimes things that are good for the linebackers aren't necessarily good for the defensive line. And I think if you're in that bubble where you're just thinking about your defensive line, it's hard to project to those guys, hey, this is our turn to take one for the team, for the guy behind us. But listen now, in this other scenario, he's going to take one for you. So, there's a give and take. And so being able to give that perspective to the players I think, encourages them to be better team players, sacrifice for the team. And then also it helps you as a coach schematically, you know, to bring up great points in the meetings to help your position. You know, when you know that, hey, look, I know how hard this is on the linebackers. I know how hard this is on the safeties. But maybe, hey, we need to make that sacrifice at D-line to take, maybe ease the load on those guys a little bit. So that perspective from top to bottom really makes you a better coach. And it makes you, I think, it just makes it easier for you to communicate with your players and also communicate with your fellow coaches and know when it's time to jump on the grenade for the rest of the D-line. And also when it's time to put your feet down and say, hey, look, this is difficult for us. We need somebody to help us out. So I think it makes you just well-rounded in every way, shape, or form. You know, every way that you want as a football coach.
You mentioned technique. Do you teach more technique with down linemen as opposed to all the reads a linebacker or a defensive back must have?
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the thing about, you're so close to the line of scrimmage that diagnosing things is just a lot. It has to be simple. If it's complicated, then it's going to be slow. And so because of that, you have to teach and operate in a way that your body's just going to react. But what we try to say is we do things that are unnatural to the thing that you want to do. But because of that, we got a drill in the time where it's reactive. You know what I mean? So as the further away from the ball you get, you have time and distance on your side so you can think a little bit more. There's a little bit more gray area in your movement, in your hands, your feet that you can have. And you still got to be technique sound and all that stuff. But it finishes in front of you. And you're ready to keep, you know, sure. You know, your reads, your hands, your feet, they have to be precise. They got to be exactly where you want them to be. And not only do they have to be precise, they got to be aggressive and powerful and balanced. And so those are all the things that come into play, you know, when you're that close. And the margin of error is so small when you're that close to the ball. You really have to teach great technique. You've got to be on point with whatever they may run into. And you have to do it in a way that keeps their read simple. That's the difficult part about being a great D-line coach, is that you have to make the complicated simple, and you still have to have a high expectation for them to stay technique sound and disciplined in everything that they do.
Friggin' to get us started, okay?
Yep, no problem, man.
All right. All right. Restarted 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Robert, since departing UTEP, how would you say that you've changed and you've improved as a coach?
You know, Tysh, the thing that's happened with me since I left is, you know, I've matured a great deal, and I think I just have a comfort in communicating with my players more than any time in my whole, really my football life. And what happened was, you know, when you coach Pro Bowlers, millionaires, guys that are making all that money, you realize, listen, if you tell them the stuff that's going to make them successful, if you're assertive and confident in what you're talking about, and if you do it in a respectful way, you can talk to anybody. I mean, you can talk to anybody. And I really knew it because in the NFL, Andre would always say, listen, they're going to call you by your name, but when they start calling you coach, you know you've earned their respect. And when I left, I texted everybody, said, hey, I'm leaving. And not every man to a man text me back, coach, we're going to miss you, coach. They referred to me as coach. And that, you know, I got that from Andre. I owe that to Andre. But now, you know, the way we coached at UTEP is the way we coached, you know, the Minnesota Vikings. You coach the right way. You do it with respect. You hold a high standard and you be honest with those guys. And great things happen that way. It's already, you know, my relationship with my room at ASU is a direct reflection of the way we did things in Minnesota with Andre. And it's already been a big hit. You know, those guys, they don't get it sugarcoated. But at the same time, I tell you the truth. I say it respectfully, and I'm trying to get them better. I'm genuinely caring about them more than I'm caring about myself. That goes a long way. And so when I was at UTEP, I was doing my best, but that maturity, that comfort in who I am has really, you know, it's really been established now, because if I could coach Daniil Hunter and Linval Joseph and Everson Griffin and you know, Sharif Floyd was a first rounder, Sheldon Richardson was a first rounder, I had a great rapport with all those guys, all millionaires, all big shots. And they respected me. They treated me great. And I had a great relationship with them. So I can coach anybody at that point. You know, as long as, again, I have a high standard in my room. I expect everybody to do what they're supposed to do. And if you do that, you're going to get all that I got. And it just goes a long way. So I think I've improved a great deal. I hope I continue to improve. And 5 years from now, I hope I can say the same thing.
You know, I'm sure you'd agree. Respect is something that has to be earned. But certainly, I would think for your Arizona State players, just immediately, the fact that you've coached in the NFL buys you some respect, correct?
Yeah, you know, it does. And that's the thing Andre used to always say. You know, when you're in college, those kids give you respect. But when you're in the pros, you have to earn it. And it doesn't matter who you are. You have to walk in and earn it. But I took that same – you know, you're absolutely right about that. You know, my voice carried a lot of weight the first day I walked in. But I took the mentality the exact same way. Hey, I got to earn your respect. I got to work hard for you. And, you know, for me, it's if you work hard in front of your players and show them all the preparation that goes into what you do and then you give them the best answers to what they're looking for, you get their respect because now they think, I got to work as hard as coach. I got to meet that standard and exceed that standard if I'm going to make it in this room. And that's a good culture to establish right away. You do get respect, Tice, but for me, you know, I'm at my best. I'm at my best when I'm trying to earn respect. And so I'm going about my business that way.
Andre Patterson, you've talked understandably a lot about him. Is it safe and fair to say that he's been the biggest influence thus far in your coaching career?
Yeah, absolutely. Tyson, you know, Andre to me is more than just a guy that I worked with and a guy that I learned from. You know, he's a mentor and really a big brother in my life. He's made me a better coach, yes, but he's also helped me to be a better person, better husband, better father. We've had talks, and the way he's helped me to mature as a man, he's helped me to feed my families, and he's helped me to really achieve my dreams of being not only in the NFL, but established in the NFL. And, I owe Andre so much. And you know how I feel about Mike Price, and I love him, Tim Hundley. Those are guys that will always be on my Mount Rushmore, and I'll care about them forever. But Andre's affected my life so much. And he's pushed and pulled and pulled all the strings. But just the way he develops players is he's helped develop me as a coach, and even more so as a man. And so I love and respect the man. I still talk to him. Hell, I got 2 texts from him right now that we're talking. You know, we're constantly in communication because we just had a great working relationship and a great relationship off the field as well.
You mentioned Mike Zimmer earlier, highly respected, the Vikings veteran head coach, veteran NFL coach. How much interaction did you have with him, and what did you learn from Mike?
Oh, I learned a ton from Zim, and I'll tell you what, interactions, it's funny you say that because Zim is so intense. You know, he's kind of, I don't know, if you're a young coach, it took me forever to approach him and talk to him just like I was used to talking to my head coaches. He's just so intense. I mean, he'll walk to his office and won't say a word, you know what I mean? So you're kind of like, is he mad at me? I kind of went to Andre's office one day and said, is Zim mad at me? Has he said something? And Andre and him are, you know, as close as you can get. And he's like, no, he's not mad at you. He would tell me something if he was. And so I had to kind of traverse that way. It's kind of funny. And then young coaches would come into the program as I got established, and they'd come up to me and say, hey, have you heard anything? Is Zim mad at me? So I had to help those other young coaches, like, no, don't worry about it. He's thinking and he's intense, and that's how it goes. But the cool thing about Zim is, you know, obviously he's very involved with the defense. Great coach. And the great thing about Zim is when he's watching film, he thinks out loud. And so he lets you into his process, lets you into what he's thinking of calling, or what he sees. So he's not one of those guys that keeps everything inside and walks into the inside of his office, starts writing things down. He thinks out loud as he's watching the film. And it's so good for a young coach just to be in the room and hear him go through his process. Because you're thinking, okay, this is what he's thinking about, how he calls the game. And he just has a gift for calling a defensive game. It's really, really impressive, which is why he hasn't given up the play calling duties. Even though he's in year 6 of his or year 7 being a head coach, he still calls it. He's just got a gift. And so I couldn't call a game like Zim does. But the cool part is I did get a glimpse into his mind as he works, and that's really, I think, invaluable when it comes to, you know, my progression as a football coach.
Besides your on the field responsibilities, Vikings, what are some of the other things that Andre allowed you to do?
Oh, a ton. You know, it's really kind of cool how we did it, because, you know, I became a conduit to the young players, and I became that bridge between him and those youngest of players. The older guys were established. Obviously, Andre's always coaching them, but I filled in the gaps. Anytime something was gray or muddy, I was the guy to go to. I would meet early with young guys we were trying to get going. I would actually go out to the field and work handwork. So I became the pass rush guru for those young guys. And it was really kind of cool, because it was exhausting at first, but after a while, I'd have this whole group of players over there before practice, and I'd just be sopping wet, full of sweat, working these boxing glove drills that we do prior to practice. And what ended up happening is that became my baby. I became the expert at that. And so guys would come to me and start talking about different moves, different things they were trying to do, work different angles. And I really got to coach them head up. So I became that pass rush guy with the handwork. And later on, Andre gets me and he goes, "That's exactly why I had you do that, because that is now your piece of the pie. You are the guy to go to for the handwork. You're the guy to go to when it comes to their rush plan for that week. Now you are a very important part of their process on a weekly basis." And so that's, again, was Andre's plan and got me involved. That's still something that I'm going to do here with Arizona State. And I was involved in obviously game planning and all that stuff. I did, you know, cards for practice. I was involved during the games. Was great because Andre and I were on a line and I'm in the box, he's on the field, and I got to see, you know, where the protections were going and how we could attack the protections as a defensive line. And people don't know this, but, you know, Coach Zimmer trusts Andre to call the pass rush games just like a defensive coordinator calls the defense. Particular defenses, Andre would actually be calling the pass rush games for the D-line. So he was really like a coordinator at that point in time. And I got to assist him in breaking that down, deciding what we were going to do. That was really good for me.
During the summers while you were coaching at UTEP, you had at least one and maybe more NFL internships. How much did that help you in making the jump permanently from the college to the pro game?
It helped me unbelievably. Actually, that's why I got the job, is I was a familiar face to everybody. Obviously, Andre got me the opportunity to go up there and interview for it. But when I got up there, everybody knew me, and we had had a experience when I got to intern. And, you know, what happened is in the years since then, the internship has gotten a lot tougher for those guys, because the college season starts so early. And so those guys weren't able to go as deep into camp as I was. And so I got the opportunity to go there and show my face and get to know them and show my worth, show that I was a worker, show that I was somebody that you want to work with. And so when the opportunity came up, there was enough people who respected my work ethic. They didn't know about me as a coach yet, but they knew my work ethic. And I think that's always the first step in getting an opportunity, is they knew I'd be available. They knew I'd make myself available. If there was a paper to be copied, I'd be there. If there was a pad to be moved, I'd be there. And if there was coaching to be done, I'd be there too. So it didn't matter. There was no job too small for me. And to be able to go there and show that, you know, you can say it, but to go there and show that just makes you all the more valuable. And especially when you establish yourself, you're in year six of your career, you're 5-6. And people just see you as a coach, they still remember you as a young intern doing all that hard work, and they just know what you're made of. And I take a lot of pride in that being a part of my story.
The playoffs were an every other year thing during your time with the Vikings. I think part of three playoff runs. Robert, tell us about the feeling of an NFL playoff game.
Man, it's like playing a championship game every week, to be honest with you. You know, the people always say, well, win or go home. And, you know, they say it nonchalantly. But I'm telling you right now, when you have that feeling like, hell, if we don't win this game, we're going home, you feel it big time. And I know my first experience in the playoffs was in, I think it was -15, -20 down on the field at the University of Minnesota. is like the fifth coldest game in the history of the NFL. And we march down. We have a 23-yard field goal to win it. And our field goal kicker misses it, 23-yard field goal. And we lose the game, and we should have won it. And this is the year after Seattle went to the Super Bowl, so that we lost it to them. And just talk about that finality, you know, that crushing blow to the stomach. And then as a man, I'm just telling y'all like this, you get playoff bonuses. And so the further you go in the playoffs, the more money you make. And I'm going to tell you like this, you got to pay bills. It means a lot, man. When you lose that game and you feel the brunt of that, it hurts, man. I mean, it hurts. And I remember when the Minneapolis Miracle happened, you know, it was me and another young coach next to each other hugging each other. And we almost passed out because we were hugging each other so tight after that play. And the next day we were talking about it, and he mentions to me, he's like, man, I was worried, man, because, you know, I got tuition to pay for my little guy. That baby, you know, that daycare is expensive. And I said, you're telling me, dude, we're about to go part-time at my kid's school if we didn't win that game. So the pressure's high, the stakes are high, you know, but it makes the defeats a lot harder, but it also makes the victories a lot sweeter. And so everything is just raised that week, and the media attention, the text messages you get afterwards from friends and family, everybody's watching. And the deeper you go, the higher the stakes. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of pressure, and it's certainly a lot of fun.
What would you guess would be the likelihood that you'll wind up back in the NFL someday?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think good enough. I know a couple people that I talked to when I left that said, hey, if I get a coordinator, if I get a head coaching position, you're on my staff. So I know there's at least four or five people that if that happens, then I'm in a good position. If people keep their word, you know what I mean? But, you know, the one thing I learned along the way, Tyce, is like, I hope there's a good chance because I loved it. I really do. But the one thing that I always resented when I was at UTEP, because UTEP meant so much to me, is I always resented when people had their eyes on the horizon, you know, and the guys weren't really appreciating my alma mater and appreciating the great city of El Paso and the people surrounding that program that I cared about so much. I always resented that. I told myself I'll never be that guy. And I know Coach Price had talked to me about that one time. It's always just get focused on where you're at and give everything you got to where you're at, and good things will happen for you. And so far, that's been the way it's been. I've been fortunate. So my intention is to, you know, I hope that someday I'm there and my paths cross with that league again, because I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I'll be honest with you. I told them, hey, man, you don't have to pay me nothing when I got there. It was the truth. And that changed. I you know, eventually I was like, all right, you guys got to pay me something. But I'd love to be back in it. But as long as I'm here at ASU, I'm going to give them all I got. And I'm very grateful to be here too, Tyce. It's a great place with great people. As long as these people are here, I really want to be here and be a part of it.
Do you desire to be a head coach? Would you like to run your own program someday?
Yeah, I think so, Tyce. I think right now, I want to be known in football all the way across the board as a great defensive line coach. I would love to be something more than that. If I can achieve that, I would obviously definitely want to be a coordinator, definitely want to be a head coach. But God has a plan, man, and I just want to make sure that I'm a great D-line coach. And I'd love the opportunity to do that sometime in my life. But if that never happens, I at the very least, would love to be known as a great, great coach in my field. That's definite. Everything else is just icing on the cake.
You know, since I know you so well, what would be the ultimate? I mean, if you could be the head coach at your high school, at Montwood High, your alma mater here in El Paso at UTEP in the NFL, what would be the ultimate for you?
Yeah, I think the ultimate would be a head coach in the National Football League. But you know, I think that's the ultimate, right? And I think that's okay to say. That's the ultimate, regardless of who's coaching. That's the ultimate, man. That's the ultimate prize, is to win a Super Bowl as a head coach in the National Football League and hoist that Lombardi. That would be the ultimate dream, you know. But it would be nice. I mean, it would be nice, I think, to get the opportunity at any level is a blessing. And I've talked to a lot of guys that may help. You know, coached with Famaligi. He's one of the dudes that, you know, back when you could still do a little bit of hazing, he's one of the dudes that shaved my head when I was a freshman at Kelly Hall, you know, for all the freshmen. And now he's the head coach at my alma mater and just doing a great job. And then Julio Lopez doing a great job as a head coach. And they just,
right.
And I coached him. And so he's a great, they all love it. And they're all doing a great job. And so I think that's always a blessing when you get that chance to run a program.
All right. Well, this is a good point to backpedal to your younger days. What are some of your fondest memories of growing up in El Paso?
Oh, fondest memories, man. I tell you what, high school football games on Friday nights are my fondest memories growing up. You know, that's where I fell in love with the game of football. You know, my dad and my mom and dad really pushed sports on me, but that was really my time with my dad. We got a chance to bond, and Friday nights, my dad would go pick me up. And I'm not just saying that because my dad's driving the car next to me, but that was really our bonding time. And my dad would show up with his, we watched the Jefferson Silver Foxes, man. They had a running back named Andre Sessions, and he was just my hero. To me, he was Herschel Walker, man. And we would go, my dad had this blanket. We'd go get like some Mickey D's or some KFC, wrap it in the blanket, sneak it into the stadium. We'd sit in there and we'd have a picnic and watch the Silver Foxes, and it was awesome, man. It was like I was in heaven, and I'd watch it. That was a cool thing. I remember people would walk by and be like, wow, your kid's really into the game. And I would just watch the game and fell in love with it. Those are my fondest memories, hearing those drums as you walked up to the stadium. You could smell the grass. And I remember one time, you know, the Silver Foxes walked up at Bowie Stadium, and they walked in front of us, and they were, you know, 2 feet away from me, and they stunk, man. I could smell the sweat and the pads, and I was just like, awesome. It was like I was looking at gladiators. I was pumped up, and I was like, this is awesome, man. And those are great memories, and those are my fondest memories growing up is Friday night football games. And I growing up in the lower valley of El Paso, I never thought I'd ever get to play college football. I thought the ultimate would be playing high school varsity football. So everything past that has been really, really special for me because those were the ultimates, right? I had dreams of doing those things, but the goal was to play that varsity, to be a great varsity football player. I was really, really grateful to get to that point.
When do you first remember playing football?
Well, I played with the Southeast T-Birds, the Vargas Park, and I with the Southeast T-Birds, and I was slightly too young to be playing, but they let me on the field. We showed up, and I think we missed, and I'm my dad's next to me, so yeah, we're 2 days too late for the tryouts. I showed up on the last day of the tryouts, and they were like, sorry, you know, he's not going to make, he's going to get cut. And my dad talked to the coach and was like, please, you know, my son just loves football. He's really, he'll do anything. Just give him a shot. And he said, all right, man, you can try, but he's probably not going to make it. And I threw my little butt around, man. I had never hit in a pad. And my coach was like, wow, you're a strong little dude. And I made the team by the grace of God. And I became a T-Bird. And we proceeded to whoop tail for my whole career as a T-Bird. Really, it was just a bunch of little dudes from the south side of El Paso. We weren't afraid of nobody. And we won a lot of games. Great coaching, great players. I fell in love with the game. That's what I remember playing. I was 8 or 9 years old. Put on a helmet. And, man, it was awesome. It was great. And we used to, like, walk across the street to a house and drink out of a hose, a garden hose. You know, if you ever drank out of a garden hose, that plasticky taste, and that was our water break, is go drink out of the garden hose at this lady's house across the street. So it was really cool. The Vargas Park, man, y'all ever get a chance, get on down there.
Was it just football? Play some other sports as a kid?
No, I played everything. I played football, basketball, baseball. I did a little wrestling for a little while, and my mom was really big into getting me involved in sports at all times because to her, it built character, but it also kept you away from gangs. It kept you away from drugs, and she was right. She was right. That really kept me on the straight and narrow, and my mother is like the best football mom you could ask for because on those days, you know, even when we started moving further away from the south side where I practiced, you know, it took about 30, 40 minutes to get to practice after a whole school day. And so every now and again, you know, as a kid, you're like, you know, I don't want to go to practice. Mom, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And my mom was like, you make a commitment, you are going to see it through. And she'd get me in that car, even if I was crying, and she'd get me to practice. Now, once I got to practice, you know me, I was going to go hard and play hard. But she taught me a lot because to this day, it's still hard for me to, hell, I can't break up with a girl no more. My wife has got me for life. I can't break up with her. I don't know how to quit anything. So that's because my mom just would get me in that car and say, you are going to see this through. Basketball, baseball, football, raining, snowing, it didn't matter. I was going to get there, and I was going to do my best. And so that's kind of funny. That's what I'm teaching my little five-year-old right now. No matter what you do, you got to do your best, man. You got to show up, and you got to do your best. But that's my mom, man. She got me there, and I was in everything, man. I was even in Odyssey of the Mind in school where they did plays, and I was in everything, man.
You excelled at Montwood as a running back. When did it first occur to you that you might have the ability to go on and play in college?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I think it occurred to me at the end of my junior year. I didn't even play varsity as a sophomore. I played junior varsity. And so, you know, it seemed like far-fetched. At that time, I started asking my coaches. They had coached – a bunch of those guys had coached Terreno Singleton at Coronado. So I'd always ask about Terreno and you know, Terreno Singleton, Andre Sessions, Ray Mickens, they all played in the same era. So I was really big fans of all those guys, really, when I fell in love with the game. And I watched Terreno Singleton at Coronado. So I'd ask him, what's the difference? And the thing I always came back is, you know, he's a better athlete than you are. He's a little bit bigger, stronger, and faster than you are. And so it took a long time. The end of my junior year, I became the city rushing champion. We played Odessa Permian, and I had like 150 yards against Odessa Permian. We lost, but I played really hard, and I had a good game. And that's when I think he was the head coach from Odessa Permian, walked over to me and shook my hand and said, son, you're a hell of a player. And if you lived in Odessa, you'd play for the Mojo. And it really like lit me up, you know, growing up in West Texas, that really sunk in. And then you know, I had some coaches say, hey, look, you got a chance, you got a shot. It wasn't real, I don't think, until I got into my senior year and started getting real attention. I was hoping for it. As a matter of fact, I bet with my father and I said, hey, if I get a signed scholarship, Division One, will you buy me the Sega Dreamcast? But I think it was late November when I got my first offer of my senior year. And New Mexico State was my first offer late November. And then the Miners offer in December. And then I had a couple more offers in December. But that's how late it was. You know, that's how late it was. And I did get that Dreamcast, and it wasn't very great, but I'm glad I got it. But it was really late in my process. So I think it was that game against Odessa Permian maybe when I started to believe in it.
Once you got the UTEP offer, was there any question in your mind that you were going to stay home and play here?
Yeah, a little bit, because that was the transition year. So Coach Bailey was there, and it took forever for them to offer me. Coach Refit was doing a good job recruiting me, keeping me alive. But I thought that I was really hurt because I wanted it. I felt in my heart I could play for the Miners, and it was a lifelong dream to play for the Miners. And once they offered, it pretty much was in the bag. And I still lingered it because I didn't understand the process. I wasn't in a rush to commit. And I knew that when I committed, my parents were not going to allow me to mess around. And as a matter of fact, I signed with UTEP, and then Army came in real strong. And they wanted me to go on an official visit, which I'm a history major. I would love to go on a visit to see West Point. That's a beautiful campus. And my parents absolutely said, no, you made a commitment to UTEP, sign with UTEP, you're going to UTEP, shut it down. And I knew that, so I wasn't in a rush, but in my heart, if I'm being honest, Tyce, in my heart, as soon as they offered, it was probably done as I look back on it. And that's something I just, you know, as a little kid, I dreamt of running through that Sun Bowl, man. And, you know, I was there when they played Air Force in 89 to get that Independence Bowl bid. And I remember when they came out the tunnel, my dad and his friend, they were just tripping out because the Miners were wearing all orange. You know, those are little memories that I have. It was just a big deal. Wow, they're wearing all orange, man. You know, they didn't wear the white pants. They're in all orange. We thought it was so cool. Watch that game. And, you know, that's what I wanted to be a part of. So I guess in the back of my mind, yeah, I was committed once they offered.
Including four of your five Minor seasons for Gary Nord. What did you learn from Gary?
Oh, Coach Nord, loyalty. You know, Coach Nord had a passion, and people don't know how good a person Coach Nord is and how much he cared about his players. You know, he sat in my couch, pointed that big old finger at me, said, you're the first house I've visited in his press conference. He comes to my house and says, you're the first house I visited today. and shook me with a big old hand, sat on my couch. And, you know, the only promise he ever made to my family was he's going to get his degree. I'm going to make sure this boy goes to class and gets his degree. And it's funny because my dad sent him an email after I graduated and said, you know, Coach Nord, you kept your word. We want to thank you for keeping your word. And my mother just thinks so highly of him as well because, you know, he kept his word, and her baby got a degree because that man kept his word. Now, it took some work because it was a couple of days where I just wanted to play football. I didn't want to go to class. And Coach Nord had to get my butt going, and Coach Poss had to make some calls and finally get me back on track. But, you know, he kept his word. And there's also another time, you know, at Socorro, I remember me and two other guys were walking. We're just talking about how much weight we had lost. And obviously Coach Nord was doing everything he could to get us what we could get. And he was walking behind us and heard us. And he grabbed us and said, come with me. And the day was over. And he took all three of us and drove us over and bought us a burger at a burger joint up the street and drove us back to our dorms and said, there you go, guys. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do everything I can to get you guys food. And it was just such a human moment for him. And I cried. I cried when Coach was let go. And he did such a cool thing. He came to the locker room, met with us, told us how he felt about us. And when I hugged that man, I cried, you know, and I told him thanks for everything. And I went through some ups and downs with Coach Norton. The one thing is that he gave me the chance to redeem myself and get myself back up. That earned me a lot of respect with my teammates. If I didn't have a coach that gave me the opportunity to redeem myself, I don't know where my career would have gone. So I love Coach Nord. I'll always be grateful for him.
Seemingly, though, as a player, you had the best of both worlds, although you, as you say, you cried when Coach Nord was let go. Mike Price comes in and energizes the entire community, and you had a chance to play for a legendary head coach as a senior.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just that, you know, Mike Price is family to me, and I had no idea how good a person Mike Price would be, obviously, because he was coming. He had been big time. He had been a national coach of the year. When he walked in, we were all afraid. We were all afraid that he was going to just replace us and take that first year like a redshirt year and do what a lot of coaches do. And they say, hey, you know, the cupboard's bare here. I got to recruit my own guys. But the first words that Coach Price said to me, I'll never forget it. It was at his press conference. I was at church. I got a call from Coach Posse. We're hiring Mike Price. You want to come to the press conference? Absolutely. So in my church clothes, I drove across town, go to the Sun Bowl. I'm standing there as the press conference starts. Everybody's talking to Coach Price, and Coach Poss walks me over to meet Coach Price. He stops what he's doing. He turns, looks at me, points at me, and he goes, is that my middle linebacker? And I felt a surge of energy, and I said, yes, sir. And he said, I'm going to need you. You're going to love playing for me. I'm going to need your leadership. We're going to have to change this thing around, work hard, but I'm going to need you to help me lead this thing. And I was just like, I was so taken aback. Mike Price, not only did he do me a great favor then, and obviously commit to me and empower me as a leader on that team and help me to reach my potential along with Coach Hundley and that great staff. But, you know, when I came back and asked him for a job as a graduate assistant, he made room for me. And I remember him sitting in his office when I asked for that job, and he just shook his head. He's like, you know, I don't have any room, but. And he got quiet, and then he shook his head, and he said, Robert, you just played your ass off for me. You just played your ass off for me. I'll have a job for you. Come back Monday, I'll have a job for you. And that's the kind of man Mike Price is now. When I got the job with the Vikings, he called Coach Zimmer and said, you just made the best hire of your whole coaching career. You know, that's the kind of stuff that Mike Price does. He works hard for his guys. He cares about his guys. You know, my wife to this day, the discussions that we had with him and Joyce have carried us to this day about who she's going to be as a coach's wife, who I am, and who we are as a coaching family. You know, those discussions we had with Coach Price, where I got to drive him home and spend time with him and Joyce at their house. And they're just wonderful people. Great coach, right? Better person. There's no doubt about it. As great a coach as Coach Price is. And I just hope the Miner fans continue to appreciate that man. Anytime he's in town, love him up, because that man is he should be cherished. He's a wonderful person, and I love him so much. And he loved my city as well. That's what's really cool about him, too. He loved us. He loved me. He loved my family. And he did more for me than I could ever do for him.
Robert, you redshirted during your true freshman season, which was the year that a momentous year the Miners win their one and only Western Athletic Conference football championship. And during that season, you're making the move as well from being an all-city running back to the defensive side of the football. Was there any pushback from you when they asked you to make that move?
Yeah, that's a funny. That's actually a funny story, Tice, because I kind of tricked myself into it. Is what happened is I redshirted with a couple other guys, and we had freshman scrimmages on Mondays. I don't know if you remember that. We used to have freshman scrimmages, and I forget if they were on Sundays or Mondays, but we would have these freshman scrimmages, all the guys that didn't play and the redshirts. And what happened was me and another running back got in an argument, and he was trying to say how nobody was man enough to tackle him because he's a big guy. And I finally stood up and said, well, I'll tackle you. And he said to me, you know what, man, you're never going to get your chance because you're going to be playing behind me, you know, something like that. So I got all, you know, I got all pissed off, and I went and I tried to ask Larry Holford if I could just line up with a linebacker for one scrimmage so I could hit this guy. And I got halfway through asking Coach Holford, and he pulls me into the copy room and starts saying, Coach, darn it, Robert, I've been trying to get you all year. I'm telling you, if you play linebacker, I can make you an All-American. You're just built to be a linebacker. And I was like, whoa, Coach, I just wanted to play for one prep. I just wanted to play for one scrimmage, man. I don't know. Hey, I love to, but listen, you know, I've been getting pushback. The offensive coaches love you. They don't want to give you up. But if you ask, you get a shot. Okay, Coach, okay. Well, I didn't have the guts, but I asked Coach Hofer. Well, Coach Hofer asked Coach Nord, and we're stretching before the scrimmage. And Coach Nord walks over and says, hey, Coach, he goes, hey, Rob, you know, hey, I don't want to scare you, but listen, the defensive coaches want to look at you at linebacker. Would you mind lining up just a couple plays? I said, no, Coach, no, that's fine. So, okay, all right. Well, you know, it doesn't mean anything. I don't read too much into it. Oh, okay, Coach, no, that'd be fine. You know, and I was so amped up because I wanted to hit this dude, right? And I line up, and I think I made 6 tackles on 8 plays or something ridiculous like that. And I was just shooting gaps, Tysh. I wasn't reading a thing. I was just a blitzing jack, just running through gaps and hitting people. And I made a billion tackles. It was fun. That dude never got on the field. He faked a hamstring injury when he saw me juice up the first guy. And so after that, it was over. I kind of went off. You know, I had a great performance that day. But after that, they were like, yeah, this dude can't play running back no more. He's a linebacker. That was it. That was it for me.
We had an unbelievable redshirt freshman season in 2001, a freshman All-American, the first of 3 years of the 4 you played. You led the Western Athletic Conference in tackles. And then, of course, 2004, your senior year, results in a return to the good times for UTEP football. 8 wins that season. What games in particular that season stood out for you?
Well, you know, my senior game, that SMU game, was a special, special moment for me. When I walked out that tunnel and I looked out and I saw almost 50,000 people in the stands. Oh, my God. I'd still get chills down my spine thinking about that day. It was great because it was a tough game. It was a back and forth game. And then right before the half, or right after the half, we just went off. I think we scored 21 points in 3 minutes or something like that. And one of them, I got to hit the quarterback about as hard as you're allowed to hit a human being and not get arrested. And Quinn Demps takes the pick and takes it back to the house. But I hit that dude as hard as you can hit him. It was just a great moment for me. It felt almost as good as that Rice game in 2000. You know, we were nationally ranked, and we played like it. We really did play like it. And then the Fresno State game that year, they were nationally ranked. We went down there in Fresno, and back then it was hard. I think they beat Kansas State, a ranked Kansas State team, earlier in the year. And then we went out there and got a win against those guys. And I remember sitting in the dugout, and you and Bernie walked by me and kind of laughing at me because I was just basking in it. I remember sitting there outside the locker room, which was a mile away from the stadium.
Right.
In some visitor's baseball dugout by the baseball field. And I'm sitting out there just kind of facing the first baseline and just sitting back and just letting the air hit me like, wow, we just went out there and punched these dudes in the mouth. So those two games to me that year really stick out. And then obviously the bowl game and the games that we should have won 10 games that year. And, you know, Boise, we should have won. That was a heck of an environment.
What about the Rice game that went into double overtime and ended in the
Rice? No, you're right about that. Sure. So that was opposite because, you know, obviously Quentin Demps. So Quentin Demps made the play. I caught the ball, and I remember everybody, I got picked up on dude's shoulders. They were carrying me off the field. I couldn't believe it. Those guys got out there so quick. But that was a thrill of a lifetime, too. You're absolutely right. That's right up there. You know, they're about 1 inch away from the line. They're about to score, and Quentin Demps puts his hat on the ball, pops. Everybody thinks I popped the ball, but I really pinned it against my knee. I just saw the ball flash across my face and stuck my hand out and pinned it against my knee and was able to bring it back into my body as I took off. And I had to get on the ground, but that was exhilarating. And it was raining buckets. It was the coldest game. And for us to pull that one off, that was big time. That was really a resilient win for our group too. That was awesome.
Your last game as a minor against Colorado in the Houston Bowl at then called Reliant Stadium. It just felt like a celebration of UTEP football off of the field. What did it feel like on the field that day?
It was surreal. It was surreal, especially when we got going and started scoring some points and it looked like we might pull it off. But it was surreal. And I tell you what, though, it was such a vindicating feeling for what we had gone through the 3 years prior, and we knew that we had winners in that group, and for us to be standing there, like you said, it really was a great celebration all the week long. We loved each other, man. That team loved each other. We loved our coaches. We loved each other. We still are a tight-knit group, and it was special. I really wish we could have gotten the win because it was a special group, and I remember when it was over, I was emotional. I was really emotional because it meant so much that we had taken that step, and we really felt that this program was on the right step, and we felt just so vindicated and great about being minors. And as we walked off the field, that crowd, I remember that big crowd that we had that came out from all over Texas to come to that game. Oh man, it was so special. And I remember taking my jersey off and I cried like a damn baby. I mean, I cried bad in that locker room, and I didn't care, man. I loved my teammates enough where I could show my true colors, man. But that whole year meant a whole lot to me as a man, because we overcame so much, and it was a big, I told you so, you know what I mean? To the entire football world is, hey, we were winners, man. You guys maybe thought we were all losers, but we showed you guys, we had to fight to do it, but we showed you we're winners. And it's a special year for all of us.
That year you played alongside the late Thomas Howard and Duro. What a trio that was.
I know, right? And those two dudes look like Greek gods, right? Those are 6. They're just looking big time. And then there's my little dumpy self sitting in the middle. But the funny thing is, when you look back on it, I used to walk like a peacock. I was a cocky little dude, and I felt like I was as good as anybody, And when you look back at the pictures, you're like, one of these things is not the other. Looking as the other two. But I'll tell you what, we had a great linebacking core. So we had those two guys next to me and played great. But Troy Calavo behind me and Jeremy Jones out there as well. I mean, I'm telling you, that was a great linebacking core. We loved each other, man. We worked hard. We felt great about each other. And I remember that Fresno State game where I got the interception. Troy Calavo should have been on the field. It was his rotation. But as a senior, I walked over him and I put my arm around him and I said, hey, big guy, I got to get this series. And he said, you got it, man. I love you. We just supported each other and cared about each other. And I ended up getting the interception to seal the game. And he came over to me and said, that was my interception. That should have been mine. But we just cared about each other. That's why they continued to play good after I left,
Let's move on. And I know you've got a meeting coming up, so we've got to shorten things up a little bit. You're now a father yourself. What does it mean to be Caleb and Jesse's dad?
Man, I tell you what, it is the best job I've ever had and I'll ever have. I didn't know that I was capable of the type of love that I have for them boys. They make everything better. I don't care how bad a day I've had, how good a day I had. When I see them boys, when they give me hugs, when they do something that – every time they achieve something else, it lights my light up, my whole life up. I hope I'm a good enough father for them. They deserve the best. And it's the best thing I'll ever do is be their father. I love their mom as much as you can love a woman. And I have a great marriage, a great wife. But them two boys, they mean everything to me. And I'm I'm working hard to be a good role model for them and a good man, and them being around and them giving me the type of reinforcement they give me, it makes me better at everything that I do. It's a motivating factor every single day. So I'm glad you brought them up, because those dudes, they're special little guys. I love them to death.
We've heard a lot about Holly during our time together today as well. The two of you met while at UTEP. She played soccer for the minors, and she's an attorney. With the moving around you've done, has Holly been able to continue practicing law?
You know, she has, but not in the field that she wants to. She's a prosecutor. She was really a rising star with under Jaime Esparza. Yeah, under Jaime Esparza and everything he was doing. And she was rising up the ranks, did a great job. She was working in a specialized unit, and she was really doing a great job. And then I had to pull her and take her to Minnesota. So she's had to take a real big sacrifice for our family. It wasn't easy. She's worked extremely hard her whole life to get there. But it goes to show what a wonderful person she is. She loved me and loved her boys enough to make that sacrifice. So we're hoping to get her back into her field soon. And if anybody knows anybody at Maricopa County, let me know, because there's a great attorney moving into the area. She's ready to roll.
Wouldn't it be nice if Caleb and Jesse got Holly's athletic ability?
Oh, I hope so. They can already run like her, thank God. Because you know me, I wasn't exactly the fastest guy. And they both got the juice. They can run. So they got mama's speed. If they get daddy's grit, we'll be all right. Actually, if they get mom's grit, they'll be just fine. So if they get her athleticism, they'll be just fine.
Robert, I got to tell you, there were a million other directions that I wanted to go with this, and we've just run out of time. What a joy this was. On behalf of El Paso, UTEP, and all minor fans, I wish you success in your new challenge at Arizona State. Health and prosperity for you and your family. Thank you for taking the time to do this. And we look forward to getting together the next time we have the opportunity to do so.
Thanks, Tyson. It's always a pleasure. Hey, man, you're the best, and you've always been the best. And it's always been a privilege that you get to say that you said my name on the radio, man. That means I made it. For an El Paso boy, that means I made it. But I appreciate you, man. Keep doing great things for UTEP.
Thanks again to Robert Rodriguez and to you for listening to the Picks Up Podcast, the UTEP Athletics production. Stay well, Picks Up, and go Miners. Let's talk again next time on another Picks Up Podcast.